And with our guest tonight, Cliff Pickover, and now, as promised, your phone calls. So that's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Man, Cliff, people are leaving the virtual mall to ask you questions, so they're all over. We'll get to them in just a second. When you were putting together the book, The Heaven Virus, what did you like the best? What did you have the fun doing?
Well, I think when I write fiction, I don't necessarily have a map. I'm not an author that has an outline that knows, you know, lays out every step of the journey. So I am journeying along with the characters. They're kind of taking over and leading the story. I like to start out with some conflict and then let it go. And then I think it has a more sense of reality and immediacy when you just journey along with the characters. And I also love it because I'm talking about stuff that's inspired by virtual universes making headlines today. So we're not all that far from some of the concepts in there.
Okay, to the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Norrie.
Hi.
Okay, Steve driving a big truck in Washington State somewhere.
Okay, Steve, thanks.
Anyway, yeah, he touched on a lot of interesting subjects. Start off with a quote by the Reverend Phineas Maledict, who simply said, "I can prove conclusively the existence of God to anyone who would make me the sole beneficiary of their estate." He's a character.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I'll start off with... let's see. Oh, as far as you're saying about taking the pill to live 1,000 years, while I'm spiritual but not any particular study, the afterlife will always exist. This is the only one we got. So, yeah, it's the ground an extra 1,000 years.
You could still be spiritual and take the pill, right?
Absolutely. Like I said, you know, it can wait. The afterlife can wait.
Well, there you go, Cliff.
That's good. So he's saying you could take in, put your afterlife on hold and take it in 1,000 years.
You got it. Next up, first-time caller line. Your turn. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Rialto, Eric.
That's in California. Go ahead, Eric.
Yes, sir. I was listening concerning about dreams, and my question was, I heard that you never die in your dream or you would be dead. Or another thing is, if you're falling, you never hit the ground. And I've had that experience happen where I just fall and I float, but I've never hit the ground.
And well, I'm very interested in things that you can't seem to do in dreams. I know people have said, you know, you can't die in a dream. And I think there was even a great Twilight Zone episode on that kind of subject. But I make lists of things that people report to me that they can never do. One is they can't, let's say you're lucid, you know you're dreaming, but they can never penetrate their body. You would think, hey, I should be able to poke my thumb into my stomach if I know it's a dream, but they can never do that. They can never turn out the lights in a dream. So I wonder what this says about the mind. Good questions.
Thank you.
Well, and who's to say with all the people who may die in their sleep that they didn't die because they were having a bad dream?
And does the dream continue?
Well, that's another good point. The virtual reality that you will go into chip-wise, who would make the graphics for it? Would you have a company do this?
Oh, well, in the book, that in The Heaven Virus, I mean, it's a simulation of them all. But yes, there would have to be designers to work on various pieces of it. Like, let's say a mall has a nice water fountain in the middle, like some of them do. You'd actually have to simulate the water. Now, in the online virtual universe that exists today called Second Life, individuals build houses, buildings, they create artwork collaboratively, but there's a whole universe being set up in Second Life right now, entire islands with foliage and plants. But you're right, someone had to create those things.
Well, you know, and the graphics that we see on computers today are absolutely staggering.
Right, and in some ways, some things could evolve independently of the designer. Lex put on the Coast to Coast webpage something I did called a virtual cavern, where I model the dripping off a ceiling cave and make these totally simulated caves with stalactites and stalagmites that you can explore. Now, what did I design? I didn't design anything there. I let the simulation do the dripping, and out of that comes a totally unpredictable landscape which people can look at.
Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. You're up. Hi there.
Hi, it's Joan from Silver Spring.
Hey, Joan.
Did your guest ever wonder about the creativity of the human mind? And we create our own realities in our dreams. For instance, I go to buildings I've never been in before. Everything is there. I see people I've never seen before. And I think that the mind is very creative. And when you look around in the real world, everything is man-made. You look around, I mean, there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of creativity in the in everyone. It's not just the geniuses and the musicians and the painters, but it's everywhere. And in our dreams, did you ever think of that?
Yes, it's truly amazing what we can create in our dreams that's coming from our brains. You know, I had a dream that I was once transported to the Renaissance in Italy, and it seemed totally lifelike to me, totally real. I heard music, you know, all this is being generated by my mind. It gets back to some studies people do with this dimethyltryptamine, which is actually something I mentioned in the Heaven Virus book, but that's a drug that seems to make people see ornate palaces. Now, where is that coming from? It's almost as if, just like spiders are designed to create webs, and certain birds called bowerbirds construct and decorate their nests with feathers and berries and shells. It's almost like humans' minds were in some strange way architected to see certain of these visions and creating palaces and temples and things like that.
Okay, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Good. My name's Mike, Chuck in Illinois.
Okay, Mike.
I got a present for you, George. If you've ever watched Star Trek Voyage, the Voyager, there was Janeway. There was an episode called Fear, and basically it was about a race of people that their planet was going to die off or whatever. So they go underground. They go into a stasis where their minds go into a computer. Now, they just can't check out of the computer when they want. They've got to be, they're programmed to wake up at a certain time. Well, in this episode, they program this computer to have all the human emotions, and they interact with the people's brains that are hooked up to the computer. So basically, these people, mostly what they manifest is fear. Now, this is what you're going to like. Fear is represented by a clown.
I love it.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's an awesome episode. You got to watch it sometime.
I'd get stuck in this virtual mall with some clown in there making balloons.
Oh, yeah. They got like all these, they got midgets and, jugglers and the whole thing in this room. And these people are held captive by fear. It's really an awesome episode. You got to try to watch it sometime.
So would you take the chip and go into this virtual world, or would you just die when you die?
I absolutely would not. I would just as soon go to heaven on my own terms. Why would I want a man created hell or whatever? You know, that might be Satan. You know, you might get the option. It might be the choice between good and evil.
A good point. So there you have it, Cliff. I bet we're not going to have time to do the poll, but I think it'll run down the lines of what you and I have talked about.
Right. I think if you're religious and are pretty certain of an afterlife, you're not going to take this simulation in the mall. If you're less certain, you might give it a try.
So you think real scientists, who generally are agnostic, am I out of line saying that?
Well, I know that there are scientists who are even creationists. There are scientists who are deep believers. On the whole, probably I'm just guessing that some of the leading scientists tend to be less fundamentalist religion, than random sampling. So maybe what you're hinting at is a lot of scientists might give this a try.
First time caller line, your turn. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing, George?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Great to get through. I've been listening to you for a couple of years, and I thought I'd take a shot. I didn't think I'd get through, but I'm glad that I did.
Good.
I'm calling from Toronto, Canada, and I'm wondering with your guest, is it Cliff?
Cliff, yes. It is.
Hi, Cliff. I'm just wondering, why not like a Club Med or something instead of a mall? I'd much prefer that. I mean, it's a little cold up here in Toronto in the winters, and, you know, I can't, thinking of spending my life with fluorescent lights and I don't know. Most guys don't like malls anyway.
A little South Beach action would be nice, huh?
Yeah, or South Beach or something like that.
One reason for the mall, it's sort of easier to perhaps program than a tropical island. But this is not an ordinary mall because it's simulated. If you get the book, you'll see that the adventures and the romance and all the strange things that go on make it a little bit, maybe part of it Club Med and part of it Club Hell.
Okay. I'm half kidding, but I'm sure your book's great.
No, it's a good point. I think if you had, most people had the option, they probably wouldn't go to a shopping mall simulation.
Well, I thought a Club Med, it's a confined space, so I thought, well, that's confined too. I'd certainly rather sit there sipping margaritas and, looking at the lovely ladies than shopping with my girlfriend all for the rest of my life.
Let's hope she didn't hear that, right?
No.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You know, on your next book, if you ever go into this virtual reality, you got to supply a little DVD to go with it so people would look at what you're talking about in terms of what it might look like, this mall.
Well, we'd like to get a movie maker to make it, right? That'll blow people's minds.
Absolutely. Let's go to the international line. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the Mexican border, DJ. I pulled over. I'm crossing over to come back home.
Oh, okay. Well, come over safely, but go ahead.
All right. Cliff, I'm going to go out and buy your book. Sounds really cool. George, real quick before I tell you, I got an alien sculpture I want to give you that I make.
Okay.
I did an ayahuasca ceremony in 2000, and I was dying from my liver problem. So I think that kind of helped because I'm 41 now. They said I would have been dead by 38. But one of the messages that came to me during this ceremony was love is the only truth. Everything else is an illusion. Well, David Icke writes a book about this four years later.
Right.
And a friend turned me on to it. He goes, hey, man, he talked about a lot of the same stuff you talked about. I never met the cat. And when I read the book, there was a lot of similarities to my ceremony, how it came about. I didn't go down there with that intention.
Did you?
Went there to go Machu Picchu.
How's your liver?
My liver, I'm doing great. I'm 41 now.
Good for you. And you're going strong.
I'm going strong. I did the diet like the medicine told me or the ceremony I was in. It said no dark sodas. I just really changed my diet around.
So would you take a pill if you could live 1,000 years?
More? Oh, yeah.
You would.
Definitely.
Heartbeat, right?
Just for the adventure. You know, if some alien ship were to come by right now, I'd hop on it and say, let's go.
I'd go.
Definitely.
I'd like to come back.
Well, that too. But, you know, the adventure is...
Would you go if they didn't bring you back?
I would go even if they didn't bring me back.
Yeah,
because, you know, what happens when you die? We don't know where we're going to go.
See, he's interested in adventure. And this shopping mall simulation I talk about, it might sound dull, but it can be quite an adventure. And I think some people are open for it.
Could be. Would you take a trip in a flying ship if they didn't come back?
Well, there's the one problem about loved ones. Leaving loved ones behind is always probably the greatest challenge.
That is why I would not stay.
Mm.
Life is too important for me to see them grow up and to see them as people than to be gone forever. Even if I had to witness the thing that I always cherished, and that is, what is life like? What are other planets like? What I'd probably do is send Richard C. Hoagland and have him make a few calls before we don't see him anymore.
Mm. To check things out.
You got it. He'd go. Wild card line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm from Norfolk there.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, what I was thinking was downloading myself to the virtual reality world. I'd probably end up at the lowest bidder and end up with the virtual reality bus station.
I love it. All right, thanks. Levity there. West of the Rockies, your turn. Hi there.
Good morning, George. Tom in Mesa, Arizona,
hey,
550 KFY.
Sure.
First of all, the sleep scenario. I've fallen and hit in my sleep, and I've died in my sleep, and I think I'm still here. Of course, maybe another virtual thing. You never know. But, you know, regarding upload into the chip versus heading off to the heavenly hereafter in judgment by the divine, there are a couple of things, even though I'm not necessarily religious, there are a couple of things in Scripture that give me some hope and comfort. That which is not found on earth will be made up for in the heavenly hereafter. And Heavenly Father prepares the table before me and my enemies for judgment, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if I'm quoting it exactly, but...
So
you know,
it sounds like you would not choose to go to this afterlife chip to spend an eternity in the mall.
No, I have no real trust or infatuation of modern technology. Most of it's good, but, you know, it's only as good as the people behind it and back it and able to manipulate it accurately. Too many things that can corrupt it out there.
You know, in my book, The Heaven Virus, people can die in a simulation. They talk about an afterlife in the afterlife. Almost gets back to your dream, your question about dreams in the beginning. Some people have nested dreams where they wake up, but they're really in the dream. They wake up, but they're still in a dream. Reality is certainly interesting.
Is there a hero in your book?
Yes, the main character is you're seeing it through his eyes. He first doesn't even believe he's dead. You know, the beautiful albino woman in the mall, Jefferson Valley Mall, tells him, you know, you're dead.
He's in the mall. He's already died. Who put him into the mall?
Well, he or his relatives had paid for this mind uploading procedure, but he didn't remember this.
I see.
You know, he's a little mixed up in the beginning. All he knows is he starts out in Grand Central Station, New York, and there's hardly anyone there. And he takes the train to meet a mysterious woman in the mall, and only then does she say, "You're dead."
Does he believe her?
Not in the beginning.
I don't want to give away the whole book.
He also doesn't know if can he really love this woman as a pure simulation who never lived in the real world. See, the mall is a mixture of pure simulations and people who lived who are uploaded. And this beautiful woman is telling him, look, there's no difference. I'm as real as you.
What do I get if I don't read the last chapter on the air here?
Oh, what do you mean, what do you get?
I want the proceeds of the book.
Ah, yes, bribe.
Holding you hostage in a virtual world, a nightmare.
No, anyway.
Actually, I hope you do very well with that.
I mean, the book covers so much. Even, you know, we've been talking about ayahuasca. This is an Amazonian plant brew that induces visions, and I talk about that in the book and how these various beings that people see while under the influence of this drug actually make an appearance in this simulation. It gets very strange.
Well, let's say, how do people get a hold of you? People can email you? How do they do this?
Yeah, and in fact, if people want to tell me more about their ideas about would they go down to the mall, a simulated mall, just go to pickover.com. And from there, then my contact information, they can tell me what they think.
All right, and again, the book is called The Heaven Virus. Cliff Pickover is the author. It's available Amazon.com, I assume, also?
Amazon.com is the best way to get it.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to continue with the phone calls when we come right back. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. And also, those of you who have not been up to our website yet, get up and see the hot story of the woman growing the horn out of her forehead. It is one incredible, absolutely incredible photograph. She said it started off as a mole. I kid you not. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, of course, it's going to be our Friday into Saturday morning open line, so get ready for that. Hey, how about this story, by the way? In a collision of 21st century science and decades-old conspiracy theories, a research team that includes a former top FBI scientist now challenging the bullet analysis used by the government to conclude that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone in assassinating President John F. Kennedy in 1963. The evidence used to rule out a second assassin is fundamentally flawed, concludes a new article in the Annals of Applied Statistics written by former FBI lab scientist William Tobin. And he concludes that the researchers' reanalysis involved new statistical calculations and a modern chemical analysis of bullets from the same batch that Oswald is purported to have used. They reached no conclusion about whether more than one gunman was involved, but they urged authorities to conduct a new and complete forensic reanalysis of the five bullet fragments left from the assassination 44 years ago. That's a heck of a story. And welcome back with our friend Cliff Pickover and the rest of your phone calls. Cliff, let us go to some more before the day is done, huh?
Okay.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi, George. Hi, Cliff. Hi. This is Jeff, your atheist friend, calling from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Hello, our atheist friend.
I have a question for Cliff about a previous book that he wrote, a great little book on omniscience. And in that, he gave a bunch of logical paradoxes about the whole concept of omniscient being. And my question to Cliff would be, since an omniscience is itself, you know, a self-refuting, self-contradictory concept, that is, you can't know learning, you can't know discovery, you can't know uncertainty if you're an omniscient being, wouldn't a God be a logically contradictory concept, since omniscience is a necessary attribute of any kind of a God, and omniscience itself is logically contradictory?
Well, that's a challenge. You're talking about a book I wrote called The Paradox of God and the Science of Omniscience.
Correct.
And I go into all these possible paradoxes. Now, the question is, is God omniscient? You know, if you read the Bible, New and Old Testament, you get a feeling that there are so many instances in stories where God is repenting, changing his mind, acts as if surprised or angry, that that's a question. Is God omniscient? I know some of the Lurianic Kabbalah, branch of Judaism, has this idea that God has intentionally contracted himself, given up some of his omniscience and omnipotence to become more human. And the job of humans through prayer is to almost like repair God. So your questions about paradoxes, I don't think anyone knows. It's certainly challenging to think about what does it mean for God to know everything and be all-powerful. What can God do, what God can't do, and why in the Bible does it seem that there's so many times where God does seem surprised?
Exactly.
Good question.
Okay, thanks. Let's move on to our first-time caller line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, this is Richard from Albuquerque.
Hello, Richard.
How are you, sir?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
I've been trying to call you to tell you that about 15 years ago, I read this book called Living Your Dreams. I didn't get the author. I don't remember the author. But it programs your mind. It teaches you to be able to program your mind before you go to sleep to be conscious when you're dreaming. And that allows you to do whatever you want to do, whatever things you've been wanting to do, you could do, like fly. And I did that, and it got to the point where I was looking forward to going to bed because I'm extending my life period by living twice as long, number one. That's one of the benefits of it. And number two, you can do whatever you wanted to do. And I could see it being as a good tool for a lot of these rapists or pedophiles that don't have to do this in real life, but if they have to do it, they could do it in their dreams and not hurt anyone. But the best benefit of it is living twice as long. You're getting twice as long living time. And it's a phenomenal book. I'm wanting to get back to it again and check it out of the library if I can find it again. I'm going to go back and look. It's been 15 years since I've done it, but I was doing it every night, and it works. It works.
I'm very fascinated by lucid dreaming. One researcher actually invented a pair of goggles that you would go to sleep with. And when it detected you're entering the dream state, the goggles would start flashing an orange light. You'd see it in your dream and become lucid. You'd say, oh, yeah, I know I'm in a dream now. I see the lights. And it would be a way of training you to be lucid. And I agree, having control over dreams is fascinating. Your idea about criminals in virtual universes is very interesting because now all sorts of laws and people are wondering about in virtual universes, what is evil? What is immoral? What is illegal? There's actually police in Belgium investigating a rape case in a virtual universe. You know, we would say, well, it's not really rape. It's these avatars. But I think laws and associated concepts are going to have to evolve through time to take care of all this.
Okay, next up, east of the Rockies. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Charlie from Ormond Beach, Florida, a suburb of Daytona Beach, Florida.
Hi, Charlie.
Okay. Now, your screener said I had a good question. Let me suggest it may be the most profound question posed to your wonderful guest, and that is, I'm going to reference my question to a famous quote by Albert Einstein. It's a quote that's excused away by the secular scientific community, but he did make this quote, a statement that science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. Now, I believe as he sought the theory of everything, a simplistic theory, he fell short in finding that theory. Now, my son is absolutely convinced, and as passionate as I am, I have that theory. And, in fact, he's even emailed George some information. Okay, I just want, here's my question. It's a simple question, and please think about it at your leisure. But in all a man's narcissistic behavior and arrogance, as he stands on the threshold of cloning, perhaps soon, another human being, why does man always believe he's the first in his own image and likeness?
Well, if you mean by first, is he the best there is or the only thing in the universe, I think that, like we discussed, alien life does exist. I also believe we should be humble because our brains that seem to evolve to help us run from lions on the African savannah may not be really constructed to penetrate this infinite veil of reality. And that's why I tend more towards science. I think science and computers and even brain augmentation and poetry will help us tear away some of these veils.
Do you think there's a possibility that there is a creator in our likeness and image and his that was the first cloner of a human being? After all, if we stand on this threshold of cloning, why do we always think we're the first planet, the first sun visible, the first solar system, and now we look through telescopes and we look through microscopes, and what we see apparently is infinity in every direction, implying there is no beginning and there is no end to anything, and that is the standard in the Creator's design of the universe. And with all man's frailties in his senses, 20/20 vision, his ability to hear, even a dog has 1 million times more powerful smelling power than a man. Why does a man feel that there is a beginning and there is an end? Do we all have an owner's manual? Wouldn't we leave one for our clone?
Well, you're also getting at is what about humans? We're not necessarily the most successful species on Earth. You know, since the beginning of life on Earth, maybe 50 billion species have arisen. That's true. We're the only ones that acquired technology, but I don't think it's inevitable that high intelligence would have to evolve. And about the infinite universe, we don't know if it's finite or infinite, but it's possible it's infinite. If it is infinite, many scientists have said that means parallel universes must exist, and that there are copies of you and me elsewhere in this universe, simply because if it's infinite, the configurations of atoms will be repeated somewhere else. It might be, you know, 10^100 meters away from our visible universe that we can see, but if it's infinite, there may indeed be copies of you and me talking right now.
Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hi. This is Mayumi. I'm calling from Sacramento.
Hi,
where the whales are, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Those poor babies.
Hopefully they'll get them back out to the ocean.
Well, hopefully they can sing them the right song.
Yeah, that's
right, whale
what I hear.
It's ridiculous. But anyways, I wanted to say about dreaming. George, you had talked about people coming in and kind of invading your dream. All through my life, my mother has come in to my dream telling me what I had to do. And in fact, my whole family, we dream of each other on the same night. I don't know if they're necessarily the same dreams, but I know we communicate in those ways.
Do you do it intentionally?
No, unintentionally. And, of course, my mother, she's nosy, and she asks everybody if we dream of each other.
She comes into your dreams just to know what's going on, huh?
Yes, exactly.
Well, mothers are that way. What the heck?
But, maybe someone will have to create a privacy shield for the dream so you can have a little
yes,
privacy.
Yes, my mother will invade. But as for the mall factor, it's like high school. It's a nightmare to me. I've traveled, not really out of body, but I've gone to other places and communicated with dead loved ones through dreams. And so I don't feel that, you know, having this computer. Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Having this chip would just extend the life. I think it would just extend our
life. You wouldn't do it, would you?
No way. No way.
Even if you could have adventures exploring the mall with all sorts of interesting people, being creative and romance.
No. I don't find the mall creative or interesting.
Is this primarily, Cliff, for, you know, death-related, someone's about ready to die, and then they get uploaded? Or could we not have fun with it while we're still alive?
Oh, good question. I mean, the Heaven virus deals with this is afterlife chip. This is how you can spend your afterlife and have adventures. But you're right. As we become more immersed in virtual realities, we will be having experiences piped into our brains, become more immersive, feel like we're truly there, just like in a dream. We don't always know we're dreaming. We won't always, you know, maybe part of the game of the future would be, so to make it more realistic, you won't know you're in the game.
See, so. I would go for the virtual trip to Mars, you know, the trip to see the pyramids, different places you might want to travel.
Would you want to know that you were actually in a virtual reality doing it?
Yeah, bother me. I mean,
what if you wanted to make it more exciting, and you, for the time being, you wouldn't even know that it was virtual, only after the fact?
You would like, for that moment, you would not have the recollection that you were who you are, I guess.
Maybe it would be even more real if you didn't realize you were in a game.
Well,
that's a good question.
That's possible, too.
A little scary, but interesting.
Next up, let's go to our first time. Well, let's go to our wild card line. You've been on hold for a while. Hi there.
Hello there.
Yeah.
My name is Lee. I am so intrigued by the concept of your book. I mean, it's just incredible.
Thank you.
I'd love to talk to you because I'm working on a book that would tie in so well. And if I could briefly tell you, your comment about the drug, everybody experiences the same vision under the drug. On DMT, I believe you called it?
Yes, DMT, dimethyltryptamine.
Okay, let me give you a different theory, and it ties in with my philosophy in this book that I'm working on. Our souls are energy, okay? And everything in space is energy. Everything is an armature. Every planet, every galaxy is an armature. We actually existed in another galaxy on a different planet, and our souls grow. We jump. From there, we start. We come here. So why not? If we're all dreaming the same thing under this drug, we're dreaming of a life on another planet. There's a different creature. It's the first stage. And heaven, as you're calling heaven's the virus, heaven is our next journey to the next existence. And Jesus says we will be returned to our body. Well, not the body here on Earth, maybe a body of another creature in another galaxy.
Well, let me tell you something related to this drug DMT. There's a physician who studied it by administering it to people, and we know that this drug is actually naturally occurring in our body at some level. And one of his theories is that DMT released by the pineal gland in your brain upon death.
You need my tongue.
Yeah, we're both tongue twisted. DMT released by the pineal gland in the brain could diffuse to your nearby brain areas when you're die to allow the soul to transit. So even serious physicians are speculating about this drug DMT and what it means for our nature of reality. It's almost like we have our brains tuned to a certain channel, and this drug gives you like premium HBO channel that you could tune to.
I've been looking at your book for 3 days, and I just noticed the eyes on the cover. Freaks me out.
Oh, they're hypnotic, aren't they?
Yeah, I didn't even see them. I didn't even notice them.
Yeah, if you look at the cover, there's other things start subtly coming out. You see there's a city landscape at the bottom. And the idea, the eye, you're right, the eyes, you don't notice the eyes.
You don't
eyes.
See them. They, like, become
they
part
pop.
Of the background. Yeah.
They suddenly pop out at you as if out of nowhere.
And there they are. Who is that? Is that you?
Not me, but maybe it represents the protagonist who is dead
Or could it represent the evil chip maker who introduces viruses into the afterlife?
I would hate to see that face peering down on me in a virtual reality existence.
I agree. It looks a little spooky.
Sure does. Cliff, we're rapidly running out of time. Once again, thanks again for enlightening us. You know, I just like talking with you. It's fun.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
You ever get out to Los Angeles?
Well, maybe.
All right. Well, you let me know.
We'll stay in touch.
In a real world, not a virtual world. All right. Take care. That's Cliff Pickover. The name of the book, The Heaven Virus. He does just a great job. And don't forget our Friday into Saturday morning program. It's going to be some open lines, lots of them, with a special hotline. What will it be? Well, you just have to stick around for that program to find out. And then we'll tell you a little bit more about what's in store for the rest of next week. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ian Punnett, Art Bell, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith. People are coming from all over the place. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.